Hello and welcome into this edition of Rough Chub Podcast with Rex and Lav. We have the final major championship of the season on the women's side, the AIG Women's Open at Royal Lytham, which Rex, you had an opportunity to play just a couple of weeks ago. And on the PGA Tour, we have the penultimate event of the regular season, the Rocket Classic, also the Swan Song at Detroit Golf Club, potentially in Detroit, if they're not able to secure a spot on the championship series moving forward in 2028. But first, Rex, before we get into that, I do want to focus on one of the players who won last week on the 3M Open and will be in the field again this week in Detroit. And that, of course, is Jackson Koivun. And I think it's always a great debate when you have a difference of opinion, even in the comment section. Like, I think that's the point of a good opinion column, is when you are trying to make a stand and you have 50% roughly who agree with you and 50% who think that you are an absolute idiot. It seems like we have landed there with Jackson Koivun and what people think either about his prospects, his future, his place on the President's Cup team in a couple weeks. He certainly is a little bit more divisive than I would have thought for the 21-year-old.
I don't know why he would be divisive about his future or his potential. I think it's pretty clear what we saw, not just on Sunday at the 3M Open, but what we've seen over the course of his career. He is going to be a singular player. I don't think that's being hyperbolic. I don't think that's being a prisoner of the moment. I'm excited about what the future of this athlete is. What you're getting at, and I cannot wait to open up this can of worms again, because this is a conversation that apparently...
I will say, if you listen to fans, and you and I try to do that either on social media, in the YouTube comment section, Instagram comment section, wherever it is that you're looking, we're able to hear from the fans of the show. I do think there is a general sense of, whoa, pump the brakes as it relates to who he is as a player and who he could potentially become. There's I think, some recent cautionary tales, whether it's a Norman Zhang out of Oregon, who looked like he was going to be a can't-miss prospect when he came out about a half decade ago. He has not even made the PGA Tour at this point. You look at Matt Wolf, the player that we cited, who won the 3M Open in 2019. His career has taken sort of unforeseen turns. And I think a lot of people were even citing Nick Dunlap, who you'll recall won on the PGA Tour at the beginning of 2024 at the American Express as a 20-year-old amateur. I would argue, though, Rex, that all of those players are entirely different circumstances than what we're experiencing with Jackson Koivun. But I do think there is a general sense of, whoa, let's pump the brakes and see what we actually have before we start anointing this kid as the next big thing in golf.
Oh, and I think that's 100% fair. I'd actually jotted down Nick Dunlap's name because a two-time winner on the PGA Tour, he had all kinds of potential. I remember you and I having this conversation. I covered that American Express he won essentially 2 years ago, and we were having very similar conversations about, I think we started with the idea that should he stay in college, and that seemed ridiculous to me at the time. But you look at what's transpired. He has those two wins. He certainly has a resume for someone who is as young as he is. And it's important to point out, he is still very young. He's 163rd right now on the FedEx Cup points list, whatever that means. It's clear he's not going to qualify for this year's FedEx Cup playoffs. It's clear he's going to have to struggle through another fall. He has exemptions because of those victories going into next year, but he has been wildly inconsistent. And I don't see that with Jackson Koivun. I will defer to you on what we might see out of Jackson Koivun. I remember some of the most enjoyable conversations I've had on the PGA Tour, really over the course of my career, or with a handful of equipment manufacturers, reps, whose job it is to identify these young players when they're in college, when they're playing amateur golf, when they're playing junior golf. And I'm always fascinated about the things they focus in on. This goes back to my fascination with Moneyball and what is the magic stat in golf. What is on-base percentage for a golfer? And the short answer is there is no short answer. The idea is you're looking for a range of things and a range of potential when you're looking at a junior or even a college player. Talking with agents about what makes you go after a certain player. Is it because they won five times in college, that they got to second in the world amateur golf ranking, or does it go beyond that? And more times than not, it goes so far beyond that. And you look at Jackson Koivun, he has whatever that magic formula is. And we can point to his ball striking, leading the field last week in strokes gained approach, a field that included Scottie Scheffler. That's wildly impressive. But I think you and I both agreed on the idea that it was none of those stats. It was nothing that you're going to look at in ShotLink and just be blown away by that you're going to peg, yes, he has the potential to do this. It's what you can't quantify. It's whatever it was that was going on inside of him on Sunday afternoon with the world number one Scottie Scheffler closing up behind him, with major champions Hideki Matsuyama and Brian Harman closing up behind him. That's the thing that I think separates him. I'm all for pumping the brakes because I never want to get out ahead of the skis too much. But what we saw last weekend, I think that's pretty much a testament to who he is, at least right now.
I mean, that's why I would quibble with all of these comps to the recent, I don't even know if you could necessarily call them cautionary tales, because they're all winners on the PGA Tour with the exception of Norman Jung, who I would completely put in a completely different category, even though he was a very successful college player. Like, Matthew Wolf did not have the emotional maturity, and everyone knew that when he came out on the PGA Tour. His coaches at Oklahoma State would be the first to tell
did
you
they?
That, yes, he has a
did
lot
they?
Of...
I don't remember having this conversation. Yeah. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't remember you and I sitting in our little boxes right now having this conversation after he had won the 3M Open. I think everybody was very similar to where we are right now with Jackson Koivun, no?
I mean, he was a very fun player, but he was also just 20 years old at the time. And his coaches would tell you he has a lot of growing up to do. We don't necessarily know that he is ready for the week-in, week-out toil of being a professional. But look, he was a very fun prospect. He was very explosive. He had a great personality, still has a great personality. And he's going to enjoy all of the fruits of his labor, and he's going to enjoy the newfound fame and freedom that he was going to have as a touring professional. But I think there was some genuine concern, at least among his coaches, how he was going to handle life as a 20-year-old professional. Nick Dunlap, again, excuse me, who is a winner as an amateur on the PGA
That's a fine.
Tour,
That's a fine.
That was an entirely different scenario as well. Remember, he had zero intention, Rex, of turning pro at that juncture. He was playing the American Express as an amateur. All of a sudden, he wins. And his short-term future and all of the perks, the world ranking points, the FedEx Cup points, the trying to get into the signature event series on the PGA Tour, he needed to do so immediately, or he was potentially squandering what could have been a very bountiful year or two on the PGA Tour. You and I had a great debate during those couple of weeks whether it was the right or wrong thing to do. I think he validated that it was the right thing for him to do at the time because he backed it up with the Barracuda win later that summer, but he was not a full-fledged prospect at that point. He was not a well-rounded player at that point, and he has been exposed in the signature events on the PGA Tour because he was built primarily on distance and speed, and we've seen some shortcomings, particularly on and around the greens, and now he has sort of been befallen with the driver yips, where he's really a lost player just 2.5 years after winning on the PGA Tour. I understand all of that, and yet Jackson Koivun is not that. He's a five-tool player. He has the emotional maturity. He has the steadiness, the preparation, the want to, the desire. He has the results that's been validated over the past year, and in his third start, he's already validated that this was the right move, and he's already prepared and ready to win.
All right, take a lap. I need you to take a drink of water. You clearly are struggling here, so I'm trying to be a good teammate. And I will go back to the idea. I would love to go back and play the hindsight card against us, since we do it against the athletes all the time. And you're right. I did enjoy that conversation about Nick Dunlap, and you and I came at that conversation from a little bit different perspective. I think you were leaning towards the idea that maybe he does go back to college. In the moment, I thought that was crazy talk. I did not know why that's what you thought was best for him as an athlete, only because of where we were in that moment in time. That signature events were now a thing on the PGA Tour, and he had an opportunity to make the most of these starts. Now, not only was he going to have a tour card, which he was probably going to have through the PGA Tour University program anyway, but now that tour card was essentially elevated to a PGA Tour Plus card, which we're going to call Tier 1 starting in 2028. No way, in no world, should he have passed that up. Now, a few years down the road, in retrospect, maybe he should have. Maybe he should have gone back to college. Maybe he should have spent a year learning the other thing parts about his game that would have made him a more rounded player. Because from at least a small window, a small sample size, it seems as if Jackson Koivun is that well-rounded player. He has all of the structure around him that's going to allow him to not only win on the PGA Tour, but to essentially endure the grind of coming out. And you're absolutely right. Now, we're looking ahead to what's going to be the tour schedule in 2028. For a player of that caliber, you're looking at 24 events. That doesn't seem like a lot, but it's a lot in a row. It's a lot in a very condensed window. And all of these things are going to have to factor in. I will point out that for those who are saying maybe we need to pump the brakes, we had this conversation on the roundtable on Tuesday on Golf Today. We did a 40-minute first block on Jackson Coigan. I cannot stress to everyone out there how unusual that is. We try to knock out 30 minutes. Sometimes that's a stretch. I don't know that you cleared your throat in 40 minutes. I will say this. Oh, boy, that's a fine as well. Look, and in my humble defense, it's Mark.
It's Bulldog. Schlabach. It's Bulldog. Not quite Mark Schlabach from ESPN.
I feel like he should have to pay me half that fine. I'll put the $5 in the hood. I was just talking to one of our producers, and you'll know who this is. When I said we were having this conversation about Jackson Coigan, I go, we did a 40-minute first block. And he goes, buddy, I could do a 30-minute first block in my sleep.
That's on live television. Wouldn't even think twice about doing so. My point, Rex, on and why I would defend a 40-minute first block is that if you cannot get breathless about a player, if you cannot be excited about his prospects, and it's Jackson Coigan, like, I'm not sure who is going to excite you. Again, Data Golf, who has been tracking these amateurs, had him as the best amateur prospect since 2010, and there was a bevy of big-name players who have come out at that period. All he did in his third start as a professional was win by three, shooting bogey-free 66, shooting 61 on Saturday, and oh yeah, stave off the world number one in Scottie Scheffler in doing so, which is why with the President's Cup discussion, which we're not going to rehash here, like, to me, it's just like a can't lose proposition. If he plays well, great. You're showcasing a future star on the PGA Tour, a young American who all golf fans should be excited about. You're giving him ample preparation and experience in a team setting, which is probably going to be useful in a year's time at Adair Manor. I just don't see the downside as it relates to Jackson Coigan. Is there anything you want to add before we move on to the other news of the week?
I absolutely don't want to uncork this conversation again. And I was all in for a 40-minute first block as well. I think you only lost my attention that last 5 minutes when I thought we went a little bit too far with the whole President's Cup debate. And no, I don't feel like rehashing this at all. I think both our opinions have been made perfectly clear. And I cannot stress this enough. I do think he's going to be on a lot of American teams, both Ryder Cup and President's Cup. And he may end up on this team. I, like some of our people and some of our fine listeners in the comments, just think we're getting a little ahead of ourselves.
And there is also some, I would say, I don't know, 75, if not more percent of the golf audience who thinks you are an absolute bozo, for which I could not have hearted, liked, or commented all of those posts quick enough. We do always appreciate the feedback. Some other news, Rex, as we sit here midday on Wednesday, heading into the week of tournaments, was the addition on the schedule of Sompo, I believe it is going to be pronounced, for 2027. It's going to be Napa, the tournament that has sort of led off the fall series each of the past couple of years after a year break in 2026. That will then be part of the 2028 championship series at a to-be-determined location. We also had some news from the tour on Wednesday that Century in the tournament at Torrey Pines will also be a part of the championship series. So I believe that is now three of the regular season tournaments that have been accounted for 2028, with a full expectation that we're going to get the full schedule for 2028 some point in the first quarter of next year, most likely by the end of January. But what do you make of these new additions to what, again, is going to be that tier one track one system for the tour?
When I did the Sompo story on Tuesday morning, as it was breaking, I always loved playing this game whenever someone would call me. And if I put a gun to your head right now and I ask you, you probably know because you read the story, but what Sompo does, give me the idea of what they could possibly do. The simple answer, insurance, financial management type company based out of Bermuda. So we can sit and have a debate about that. I think this gets to the idea. Two things sort of stood out over the last few days. The PGA Tour is going to do this in bits and pieces. And this is Brian Rolapp learning what he did best, what the NFL does best, and that's to control the narrative even during the offseason, to always be forefront somehow in the headlines. And you look at what the NFL has created with the draft, you look at what they've created with the combine, like, it's never really an offseason for the NFL. And that's what it seems like the PGA Tour is going to do on this front. The other thing that stood out is just simple math. You and I have had this conversation, and now we're starting to see it on paper. We're starting to understand. You're starting to see firsthand exactly how quickly that real estate runs out. It's going to be 23 to 24 championship series tier one events. Start off the top. That's four major championships. That's the players. That's five. They count whatever cup is being played that year, Ryder Cup or President's Cup. That's six. Essentially, we're looking at probably two playoff events that would be part of that mix as well. So we're already at eight, and we haven't even cleared our throat. And now you figure the eight, we have eight signature events right now, Travelers being one of them, and that was announced on Monday. You would imagine they're going to be part of the tier one starting in 2028 and going forward. So now we've jumped up all the way to 16. And even if you're on the high end of where we're talking, that leaves eight spots available. And now we have whatever the event in Napa, California is going to become, wherever that relocates to starting in 2028. And you have, as you pointed out, Century in San Diego. I think both of us agreed San Diego was going to fall into that category, as will Scottsdale. So now we're essentially down to five spots on the high end. I mean, this is just simple math. And you and I can sit here and debate back and forth. But if you're a tournament director, and I talked to a couple tournament directors about this yesterday, you're starting to look at the wall and realize that this is musical chairs to the extreme, and you're going to run out of seats really quick.
A couple of digressions here. One, why do they keep lumping the cup event, only one of which the PGA Tour controls in the President's Cup, as part of this championship series? First of all, they keep saying this championship series is going to run from February through August. The cup does not. It's in September. It doesn't include all the PGA Tour members. Why do we keep including this as part of that overall number?
Well, it's semantics. And I think, whatever, 22 to 24 events, most top players will tell you that window works for them. Some, Rory clearly will tell you, probably not. I'm not sure. I'm not sure if Scottie Scheffler really wants to play 24 events either. It softens the blow a little bit when you tell them that, nope, one of those is a cup, and you don't really consider that part of your schedule. That's clearly an outlier on that front. We can take it off the mix, but now we're looking at a 21 to 23 event schedule. This is just semantics.
Yeah, it's just very confusing that the PGA Tour keeps lumping it in when they're very clear that the schedule is going to run from February through August. Secondly, as we mentioned with the Sampo in 2028, it's going to be a to-be-determined location. So you would think that obviously Napa would be ruled out. It makes a lot of sense. And I kicked around this topic with Taylor Zarzur on The Starter, his show on Sirius XM. It makes a lot of sense when you look at the PGA Tour schedule that the soft spot of the schedule, the weakest part of a schedule, is during the summer. And if you were to keep this event in the PGA Tour summer and keep it on the West Coast, whether that's a San Francisco or a Seattle type, obviously TPC Harding Park or Olympic come to mind for a San Francisco, Sahali, Chambers Bay makes a lot of sense for the Pacific Northwest. Having that in prime time during the summer when there's not a whole lot of other sports competition, I think makes a lot of sense from the PGA Tour perspective. And I think you're exactly right, Rex. Like, this slow trickle, it's immediately reminiscent of the NFL and what the NFL cycle does. And as a Jags homer and a super fan, it's excruciatingly painful how they always have it in drips. I think of the schedule announcement and sort of leaking what the Sunday night games are going to be and the Monday night games are going to be and the Thursday night games are going to be. And here's the other showcases. And here's what you're having during the holidays. And you're trying to do this puzzle pieces, particularly when we're trying to determine what our road game for the year is going to be. Like, they just drag it out, but they can drag it out because there's interest and it creates a lot of anticipation. You make a great point about the sponsors, because one by one, it is now creating a sense of urgency. And you have a finite number of tournaments that are going to be left remaining in this top tier. And once again, that's the NFL model. That is how they can command so much money in these media rights for what are these small packages. There's a Thursday night package. There's a Sunday night package. There's a Monday night package. There's a holiday package. There's a Black Friday package. If you only have these limited windows to break in, you are going to command top dollar. And all of a sudden, as these tournaments start coming off the board, and there was a report on Tuesday from our friend Josh Carpenter, the Sports Business Journal, that the North Carolina Tourism Association is looking to put up $40 million to keep the Wyndham Championship among that top tier. That is the sort of thing that's going to happen. And so a year ago, when Brian Rolup was releasing this model and saying, you know, we're going to be able to get top dollar for all these tournaments, a lot of people rolled their eyes about, why are you possibly going to pay this much money, sometimes double or maybe 2.5 times what you're right now commanding for a PGA Tour event, to have the same exact players? This is how. Because if you want to be among the prestigious league in this top tier, it's going to cost you. And all of a sudden, when there's not many spots left, you can get top dollar and more just to be among that tier one.
So right now, the rumor for a tier one championship series event, somewhere that price tag, and this is per year starting in 2028, it's going to be, the rumor is between $33 million and $37 million. To put that in context, I called a tournament director yesterday and was asking him if he had heard anything about this. And I threw that number at him and he was taken back. He gave me a woof. Is what he gave me. And I go, is that higher than you expected? You didn't expect that. And he goes, did not expect $37 million. But it gives you an idea, to your point, of exactly how Brian Rolup and the PGA Tour are going to leverage this. They knew the window was going to close quickly. And maybe one of those, I kind of lumped all of the current eight signature events into one sort of mold. And just assuming all of them are just going to fold over and be tier one events, that's probably not going to be 100% true. I can imagine there's going to be a little bit of attrition, but I've also been told by a source close to these negotiations and close to this with knowledge of what's going on, that they're making movements on every single front. That's for tier one and tier two events. The idea that they've already sort of locked up one of those big markets that they've talked about, whether if that's Chicago or San Francisco, seems to be kind of an obvious choice for this new Sampo event. They've already locked up one of those and they're in discussions with some of these other big markets. The idea that the broadcast partners, to get to the sort of the media rights part of this, they love the idea of not only what the regular season is going to become, it's going to become much watched TV, but what they're going to do with the playoffs. That we've wrestled with this idea that they've never quite gotten the FedEx Cup playoffs right. We're talking about two decades of trial and mostly error. They love the ideas of this sort of player-driven concept of let's do match play. Let's do this the right way. Let's have fun with it. And let's take it to some venues that really haven't seen PGA Tour golf. We've seen how the Walker Cup has worked so well, going to Seminole, going to Cyprus, going to these iconic venues. The idea is let's do an all-star game, a two-week all-star game, but let's make it really cool. And you can do that by crowning a regular season champion. So everything is starting to fall into place. And I have to admit, like, for all of us from the outside who have spent essentially the last year trying to figure out what this is going to look like, it looks good right now.
I mean, it seems like they have more suitors than spots. That's how you create power. That's how you create leverage. And that's how you create a very viable and successful financial model for the PGA Tour, which is what they primarily brought Brian Rolup on to do so about 14 months ago for the PGA Tour. Stay tuned for more on that front. A couple other items before we get out of here on this midweek edition. Brooks Koepka, Rex, a WD from the Rocket Classic this week on the PGA Tour, the penultimate event of the regular season. No reason was given. Haley Hunter, our reporter on the ground this week in Detroit, said it was potentially because of personal reasons. A lot of people were pointing to the wrist hand nerve issue that Brooks Koepka was suffering from in the RBC Canadian Open in the run-up to the U.S. Open. We have to wait to see if he adds the Wyndham Championship to his schedule. But it is interesting, Rex, because right now Brooks Koepka, entering the penultimate event of the season, 84th in the FedEx Cup standings. He was already going to be ineligible to receive any of the bonus money from the FedEx Cup. But if he does not make the FedEx Cup playoffs and get among that top 70, it's going to be very interesting to see how we sort of zoom out and view Brooks's reintegration to the PGA Tour in 2026.
Yeah, on the Tuesday roundtable, he was the one I talked about wanting to watch. Because even though it has been a fascinating storyline since he returned at Torrey Pines and all the hoops that he had to jump through to return from LIV Golf, him sitting on the porch waiting to get in to hit the Heritage in Hilton Head and not getting in. Like, I think from what the tour wanted to do, as let's call this an example of, okay, this is what the pathway is going to look like for those who want to come back. I think that's been a success story, but he's only had one top 10 finish. That was at the Cognizant Classic, and it seems like forever ago. He hasn't played his best golf, and it's been his putting. Obviously the injury at the Canadian Open stands out, but you're right. Going into next year, my understanding is all bets are off. Like, suddenly he can start getting sponsor exemptions into signature events. I would imagine that would be one pathway for him. I don't think this is a make or break for him at all. And he would need something pretty special to happen next week at the Wyndham Championship, even if he decides to play. But it has been a fascinating case study, because you can make an argument from a story, it's been a successful year, but from a competitive standpoint, it really has not.
Yeah, especially when playing up against what you could argue is the PGA Tour B Tour. The full field events on the PGA Tour, trying to earn his way through the Aeon Swing 5 and get into the signature events, was unable to do so for the duration of the 2026 season. Again, if Brooks Koepka is receiving sponsor exemptions into the signature events in 2027, and by all accounts, it looks like those are still going to be on the table in 2027, I think somewhat controversially now, you're going to be moving to top 90 in a pretty significant cutoff between what's the Championship Series, the Challenger Series. That one's certainly going to be controversial for a player who left the PGA Tour back in 2022. Another thing that's going to be fun to watch this week and at least listen to is an announcer-free stream that they're going to be offering from the PGA Tour studio. So again, this is going to be no announcers. They're going to be filling in sort of player conversations, caddy conversations, some notes, some full screens, sort of storytelling through graphics as opposed to verbally with folks like you and I on the telecast. Will you be tuned in for this, or do you think that this is sort of a cheap gimmick?
No, I'll be tuned in because I am curious. And we did something earlier in my career at Golf Channel like this, where instead of no announcers whatsoever, we essentially just put up tweets. So it was myself, it was Randall Mell. I forget who else we would have been on property as reporters, but we essentially just did announcer free. And then we would put tweets up. If you were looking at Mac Hughes with a birdie putt, we would try to add some sort of context.
What a pull.
That one. Yes, long ways. I think it's interesting. I always like the idea when a producer is trying something different. You and I being in TV, we certainly push producers to do 40-minute first blocks on a first-time winner on the PGA Tour. But yeah, I'll tune in.
I think it's an interesting concept. It has been done before. I believe this happened on the Korn Ferry Tour a couple years ago as it debuted on Golf Channel. I'm for it. I'm interested to see if I actually enjoy it or if I like the natural segues that come from professional announcers doing a professional job weaving in and out of shots. But I'm certainly willing to give it a try on Thursday, Friday on ESPN Plus for the Rocket Classic. And finally, Rex, it looks like the announcement could come at any moment, but LIV is reportedly set to cancel its $40 million team championship in Michigan. That would mean that just two events remain on the LIV schedule, and they would be without their big grand finale, the culmination of the LIV season. What would you make if they go Bedminster, Indiana as their final two events and do not have this big culmination with the team championship with $40 million at stake?
I don't think Martin Keimer left any ambiguity when he was asked about this last week in the event in the UK, that the team event wasn't going to happen. I don't think anybody is surprised. We all know that it is a struggle right now for Scott O'Neill and his team trying to piece things together, trying to hold things together, trying to get some sort of funding in place for next year before that September 1st deadline that he has set. So I understand why this is such a scramble. I guess the interesting part for me as someone who covers LIV Golf and as someone who has watched this sort of unfold in real time is, what does this mean for each of the individual contracts? Because my understanding is that there were things that when these players, when John Rahm and Bryson DeChambeau signed on to LIV Golf, that not only were they signing on for certain things, that there was responsibilities that they were going to be held accountable for, but also same with the other way. It had to be X number of events with a team championship, with minimum purses. Here is an opportunity for some of those players, John Rahm, for example. If he does want to get out of his contract, this could be the opening in the door. I think that's what we need to watch.
I mean, what a legal mess. Are player contracts voided, vendors not being paid, bankruptcy potentially on the table for LIV Golf, new investment coming in. How do you, you know, pay off all the debts they have in addition to then pumping money into LIV product to improve it for the future? It is a mess from that standpoint. I will say, just with the team championship being reportedly eliminated, it is ironic because the league was built on this team model and this team concept. And this is the one event a year that the squads actually go head-to-head in a match play format. They had it at Doral a couple years ago. Like, I thought it was actually pretty good. Two-man head-to-head match play competition. That's the format I've actually been screaming that LIV should be going to 4 to 6 times a year. I don't think the 14-event schedule as sort of a lower-level, lower-tier 54-72-hole stroke play tournament actually worked. but I really did think that there was a potential avenue 4 to 6 times a year to do head-to-head match play. Somewhat ironic that the team concept, the team model, and the team championship is actually the one to go. Obviously, the $40 million has something to do with that. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of the Golf Show Podcast with Rex and Lav. We'll be back on Sunday evening for a full recap of the Rocket Classic, as well as the AIG Women's Open. Sure to be great. The grand finale, the ending to the major championship season on all tours. A little bit sad that we sit here at the end of July, and that actually is the case. We'll cover it regardless, and anything else that comes up in the world of golf. If you want to be a part of the show, you guys know the drill. Go into the YouTube comment section. Make sure you let it know that you want to be part of the voices in the crowd. That's a comment, that's a concern, that's a complaint, that's a question, all of which will be answered on Sunday. Thanks for listening. Thanks for support. We'll talk to you guys on Sunday night.
Just note the 40-minute first block.